This week, No Refund Theatre presents
Frozen by Bryony Lavery.
All right, so this is Jesse Kramer, director of Frozen. What is the show about?
Frozen is about three characters. A mother named Nancy, whose 10-year-old daughter was kidnapped, raped, and murdered by Ralph, who is the second character. And then there's a third character named Agatha, who is a clinical psychiatrist who's doing her thesis on criminals and the criminal brain. And Ralph is Scottish. Ralph is Scottish. We're doing the podcast.
Oh, that's fine. But you're fine. We are joined by assistant director Katie Mulfinger. Hi. Okay.
Ralph is Scottish and Nancy is English and Agatha is American. So it's very diverse cast, yeah. And that's the plot synopsis, not giving too much away.
Okay. What is the setup? Because it's not a usual
format. It isn't, no. It's about 80% monologues, I would say, and 20% scenes between the characters, but it's mostly the characters just kind of soliloquize the audience about whatever's on their mind. And it takes place over like 30 years. I think it's 20. It takes place over a long time, and it's just very... it's almost completely done in monologues, so it's very interesting that way.
So we really get to see inside the characters' heads because they speak without that kind of
definitely. They do. It's pretty explicit in how they're feeling and what's going on. There's a lot beneath the surface, though. There's a lot of, I guess, subplots that are going on between the characters that definitely. It's not the typical criminal, the typical mourning mother, the typical like psychiatrist who. They're not like that at all. I've been saying since the beginning of with rehearsals and everything that I think the author, she was really trying hard to surprise you consistently. Because, you know, there's things, you see things coming, you see meetings between characters coming, and they're never what you're like, oh, well, in this scene, the mother's going to be crying because this is happening, and it does not happen that way. So it's things continuously surprise the audience, I would say.
Okay. And how did you become introduced to the story?
My friend had a class where this was taught and told me all about it, so I decided to run out and get it because it sounded really interesting. And I had heard a monologue of it once performed, which is Matt Davidson's first monologue in the show. He plays Ralph. And so I ran out and got it and loved it immediately and just realized that it was a very good show for the form because the set is blank, like the set calls for nothing, but so I can make anything I want out of it, so I know what we can do in the form, I know what we can't do in the form, so it just seems like something that would work well.
Right. And I guess what are you hoping people to get from watching it?
I'm hoping people look at these, they're kind of archetypes of characters. I mean, we have, in terms of drama, you have like the crazy person and the mother character. I mean, like, these are kind of archetype characters, and they end up not being like as you would think they are a lot. You end up sympathizing for characters you wouldn't sympathize for. You find you lose sympathy for characters that you would sympathize with, and they're all rounded. They're all extremely flawed, and you will probably hate all the characters at some point, and you will like them all at some point, I will say. And so I think I want to see the audience kind of go through that kind of journey with the characters and see, and just see kind of three characters who are just very much are trying to break free. I guess that would be.
Okay. So we are also here with two of the actors in the show, Sarah Amin, who plays
Agatha,
and Matt Davidson, who plays
Ralph.
Okay. So what has this experience been working with these characters?
It's been really different, you know, first of all, I had to explain to my mother, who was excited that I got cast in another show, that I'd be playing a serial killer pedophile. Two very disgusting types of people mixed into one. Because it's mentioned before that the Ralph kills Nancy's daughter. But this is he has 10 victims.
This isn't the first time he's done this.
Yeah,
and it's not the last 10 time he's done this. So.
It's been really different because, like Jesse said, like these characters have they're very obvious ways that people see them in. You know, like whenever the news, you know, if there's ever a serial killer pops up on the news, everyone always, you know, kind of immediately thinks of, like, you know, this crazed monster and such. And they're all, like, from the research that I've done, a lot of them are crazed monsters, but they're all different types of monsters. And especially Ralph is a very specific kind of serial killer, in that he's a pedophile as well. And in which case, I guess there's a lot to read into the script about, like, you know, whether it's another crime that is committed or whether this is the way he thinks and the way he is, which I think is something the show involves.
The show definitely discusses a lot whether or not these actions are out of malice or out of inability, just inability to think rationally. Like, you know, you have the idea of there's this crazy person, but are they crazy because they're trying to be crazy, or are they crazy because they actually are just crazy? Like, they are insane. It definitely deals with that a lot.
Like, we're talking, like, the basis of Ralph, especially, was, like, you know, he has emotions that are normal to other humans, but he gets them at times that are not normal. You know, the things that make him happy, you know, are not things that make people happy. He gets angry at things that people don't get angry at.
But it's genuine, happiness and genuine anger.
Right.
It's funny. It's just, it's very interesting because it's completely, it's almost just inverted. The things that make him happy, he gets genuine happiness. It's not like a sick, like, oh, wow.
It's not happy that it's evil.
It's not evil happiness. It's like, he really thinks that this is a normal thing that, I mean, you can talk more about it, but it's a normal thing that should be happy.
Oh, yeah, I mean, like, this is probably, like, the most, like, this is the play, like, whenever I read it, like, I knew it was going to require probably the most research, you know, like, it's weird, you know, like, because being in a theater club, you know, there are roles that you play where it's like, oh, I get to goof off, but this one's like, you have to, like, understand it more, I think, before you approach it, and, got to read a lot of depressing literature, and, but yeah, it just ended up, finding, reading about these people and not being able to help themselves to an extent, like, you know, certain serial killers were, like, completely normal, like, people. They're not, they're not all Buffalo Bill from what's it called?
Silence
of the Lambs.
Nice.
Although that guy was based off a real person.
That's for the day, okay.
I think when Jesse first gave me the script, I was somewhat expecting, like Jesse mentioned, kind of a black and white story about a grieving mother, a serial killer, and a psychiatrist. But what's been really interesting about this process is the shades of gray that are in the show. Nothing is really black and white, and Jesse mentioned this also, the way that sympathy, you know, this exchange between characters and different scenes and things like that. And I think I really enjoy looking into, like, the nuances of the show and how, I don't know, yeah. I like the show a lot. I like playing. And I feel like I look at it different every time I read the script. There's more things you can take out of it. So I think the audience will leave asking themselves questions and feeling different things, which is really cool.
Right. Is there a lot in the show about the, I guess, cultural differences between the three people in it?
No, not really.
That's what's cool about it, actually.
One's Scottish, one's English, and the other one's American. Yeah. And there really isn't much discussed about it, other than that. At one point, Ralph said something on the lines of, the fucking Scotland.
Yeah.
That's really it.
Scottish, but I doesn't really enjoy being in Scotland. I don't think there's really any difference other than, like, when the author just, like, and this guy's Scottish. I don't think she's trying to say Scottish before.
No. I was just wondering if that was.
It's implicit. It's not.
I mean, you mean if you wanted to read into, Agnetha is American, and that she's viewing this even more so from the outside, like outside the country, you know, like when she talks to Nancy and to Ralph. Their conversations are really weird because, she's sympathetic to things with Ralph that, you wouldn't expect her to be sympathetic to, but then she's, completely unsympathetic to the things that, you would expect. What she was saying, the show really does take a different approach on what you'd expect it to take. You are definitely going to be disturbed.
Yeah.
There are several points in time, don't think for a second, that it's a show about serial killers and the study of them and the people they affect. Don't think that we're taking such a different approach.
It's not your typical Lifetime movie.
Taking such a different approach that you're it's all going to be happy, but you're going to be very disturbed. But the things that disturb you, I think, are going to be the things that you don't see coming.
Yeah, it's funny. There's no scene where Ralph. Not a spoiler alert or anything, but you're not going to see a scene where, Ralph is chopping up a little girl. You're not going to see that. It's not going to disturb you with violence. It's not going to disturb you with, Ralph, leaning over, creeping at the audience. It's not going to happen that. It's the things that will get to you, they will make you uncomfortable, and it's going to be things that you won't see coming. It's just very, like I said, the show continually surprises you. It's very interesting. I was reading it and I was just, I couldn't believe it. It was very interesting. It was all so shocking, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ralph is a graphic character too, but he's not graphic because, he describes to you in detail how he would, rape and kill these little girls, He's graphic in the way that he talks, but it's weird. Probably the thing that he's least graphic about
is how he killed the
murders. He doesn't really talk about them.
You never hear him.
And when he does,
it's private.
It's private. He just wants you to know that it's efficient and clean and
You're kind of disturbing me already.
He's very proud of it.
Yeah, he's
but not in an evil way.
It's so interesting. It's like a dog bringing a dead squirrel to the house to its owner.
Agatha and Ralph end up having a weird relationship. Really off-putting. It's also interesting seeing how the psychologist and the serial killer over a span of 20 years or so. Know each other for
she's only there for 2 months.
Yeah, okay, for 2 months, I guess.
For the last 2 months.
They get to know each other even though they come from different worlds. I don't want to make that sound a city boy and a country girl. No.
Yeah.
It's like Aladdin. Aladdin.
The Prince and the Pauper, sort of,
Okay.
It's a retelling of that.
Across between that and the Frog Prince.
Yep.
I'm just curious, you don't have to go into it if it gives something away, but this 10-20 years you're talking about, are these characters in constant contact at that time? Or just is it more a story of, a certain duration, people know each other, and then how they... what happens after that encounter?
Agnes is always in presence. It's very strange in that sense. Agnes is never, you only see her for the last 2 months of the show. But that's 2 months of the duration of the play. But you do see Ralph 20 years in the past, and then you see Nancy 20 years in the past, and then they kind of travel off and catch up to Agatha.
Oh,
if it were a movie, they would, start it out with Agatha going in the bottom of the screen, say 1995.
Yeah.
And then Ralph
would have been 1975.
More
than, okay.
Yeah.
But it really, I don't really think it has.
It's not that. I don't think the timeline of the story is going to really fuck you. It's not difficult to follow. And if we find that it is difficult, it will make it more obvious what time period it is. But I really don't think it will be. They all kind of do their own thing, and then they all collide.
Okay.
That's basically it.
Okay.
And so most of the scenes, I mean, they all meet each other at some point. There's never a scene between all three of them, but they, all the pairings end up shacking up at some point. So.
Shacking up? I'll just call it that.
And then what does that title refer to? Or what are you each pulling from that? Because I like titles and what they reveal about a play and what they kind of hint at.
Frozen. I have a very long-winded answer, but somebody else want to take it?
I say the word frozen once.
You say it a lot.
I say, yeah, Chester does say it a lot. It clearly is a recurring theme, but I feel like the word frozen means something different to each character. Mm. And I think it's something that the audience will take out and they'll understand once they see the play, you know.
Yeah, literally, if you were to say, like, the place where frozen shows up in the show is Sarah Amy's character, Agnetha, refers to, she's like writing her thesis, and one of her sentences is like that she calls the criminal brain a frozen Arctic sea. And that's like the literal way that the word frozen shows up, but it's not, that's just, it's the tip of the iceberg, I guess.
Definitely.
I guess the obvious thing is like with such a bold word as frozen, it's like, oh, they're frozen in their lives or something like that, but it's just there's so much more to it than that. That's a question I think you should ask the audience on their way out, how they pull it out. Like I said, I have a very long-winded answer that I think would bore people and would also, it would bore them because they haven't seen the show yet, and I don't, not that it would really give anything away, but I think that it's
best for them to see for themselves.
I think the question at the end of the show is that's something that people can talk about, like why was the show called Frozen? Like who was frozen, or like what was, like how was that latent through the entire thing? Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely a question for people on the way out. Mm-hmm. There will be an essay you have to hand in.
Extra credit point. All right. And two actors here. Do you have any questions for each other? Or your director, or your
question. Oh, let's do.
Or from yourself. Okay.
I would say, I just pointed, and you can see me pointing. Sarah, how do you deal with all? Because you're someone who gets creeped out very easily.
Yes.
In fact, you even walked out of the Pillow Man, which is our last really, really creepy show. And not because it was bad, but because it was just too intense.
It made me actually ill, yeah.
So how?
It made me kind of proud.
How does. Yeah, Matt seems to just pop up in all the really creepy shows. But how is it dealing with this really heavy, creepy sort of subject matter?
I think a lot about what my actual character does. I mean, in the beginning, I'm not giving much away, but she does have a bit of a breakdown. It's a lot about separating, I think. It's really with this show, some shows I'm in, I kind of take in what's going on, take in the atmosphere. It's really important that you put that in a separate place in your life and keep it in context. If I were to walk the streets thinking about every single element of the show, I would really probably have a hard time getting up in the morning. But yeah, it's been a good learning process to kind of put that aside, my double and stuff.
Yeah. I know, like I was looking to be in a drama this half, because the past two shows I did were comedies, one more so than the other. But like I was looking for a drama, and like Frozen's a drama. And it's like, it's a drama. I mean, like, no one is really happy. And when they are, I think it's Ralph and Lily.
They're like, why is he happy?
Yeah, like, I was a little concerned, too, because, like, you know, you should despise these people. Like, serial killers, you know, America is infatuated with serial killers.
Yeah.
It's weird, like, doing research, we have more of them than anyone else, too, for some reason. But, you know, I wasn't, like, I've actually played a serial killer before. It wasn't really played up. It was, like, at the end, it's revealed that this quirky neighbor was a serial killer. But, that's the part that probably bothered me the most about is, like, the pedophile part. Because, these people are very easy to detest, very easy to detest a lot, and I detest them. And, you know, and so, like, the show really brings up a lot of questions about, like, it being a psychological problem versus a regular crime. And it made me uncomfortable a lot, like, until I read the script, really. And the script, luckily, like I said, like, I don't, like, Drop isn't going to describe in graphic detail why he likes little girls, what he does to them, you know, like,
It's unnecessary.
Yeah, it's unnecessary.
In fact, I think if they were very explicit with that, it would just turn into a slasher play.
Like, this play.
It would be complete exploitation, and it does not do that. That's why I like that. I'm sorry.
The script was incredibly creative with it. Like, when I read it the first time, I was like, good. It's awesome script. It was on Broadway.
It was nominated for Best Play, and won a bunch of awards for one of his awesome.
It's really well written. And it's really well written because I think she knows the fact that she can establish this guy as a pedophile serial killer without having to show the act or have to discuss the act.
Exactly, yeah.
Very much. I also spent a lot of nights sleeping with the light on. Because I got some serial killer books for Christmas.
As gifts.
No. I got serial, like people knew I was doing this play, and they're like, here, you know, read up.
But, I mean, it wasn't just your gifts, right? So you got other stuff, right?
I got other stuff. Okay. Yeah, I got serial killer books and knives. Yeah. Like cooking knives, like things to chop food with, but, like, they'd work on people, too. I don't know.
But,
I don't know what kind of message they're trying to send me.
It was funny because Matt sent me, because Matt was really excited to do this play. I've done three shows with Matt. This is my third. I like working with Matt. He's very enthusiastic. An admirer.
This is my second show with Sarah, calling her a C word. Sarah's the only girl in the world who I have called the C word. Just because of two plays where Ralph is very sexist, and which is interesting about him because it's like almost you don't really think is he really sexist or does he just feel that he should be? Sort of, I don't know. It's when you see play a very complex character, and
it's funny because Matt over break is really excited about the show, and he would send me emails or IMs, he's like, check this website or check this stuff that I found, and I literally got the book, the play came with a website that you can read up on the cases and stuff, and I got about three cases in, and I was like, I'm so creeped out, I can't do this anymore. And I was just like, Matt can make a character, and I'll direct him, and it will be fine. I was
brave enough to keep reading.
I have a question for you, actually. When you initially started reading about the character, did you find yourself, did you have a hard time not judging Ralph?
Yeah.
As people, we make pretty, you know.
Good question.
That's a great question.
It's really hard. Like I said, there are a kind of people that I particularly detest. I watch To Catch a Predator. Every time it's on, I can't not watch it. You know, and I hate everyone that comes on. But
even by the end of To Catch a Predator.
The end of To Catch a Predator, you see when they start shaking.
God, it gets painful.
They start shaking mice really It is. That's what this show kind of. Yeah, this show is like To Catch a Predator. You get that brief moment of sympathy for this poor guy that Chris Hansen is humiliating. He deserves to be humiliated, probably, but if anyone does, but like.
It's like it To Catch a Predator.
See that human part come out of
it. To Catch a Predator. Matt has a lot of work in the show, I would say, as compared. Because, the psychologist who's just reporting and the mother who's grieving over her daughter, you get immediate sympathy for them, just because of the nature of the characters. But Matt has a lot of work because
to reveal his humanity.
Yeah, because the first scene, I don't want to ruin anything, it's not ruining anything. The first scene is him abducting the girl. I mean, it's... So it's like you get that first, you know, I hate you, okay? Everyone in the audience will hate Matt like that. And he kind of works with the rest of his job for the rest of the play is to reveal that Ralph is disturbed, absolutely, completely unable to function out of insanity, yes, but there is humanity.
With that, I don't get a ton of jokes either. It's like, I can't even make him laugh to help my case.
Actually, that reminds me, has rehearsing this show been that different, given the topic of the play? Like, are you able to, I guess, enjoy that process of it?
Yeah, it has been different.
It's been very different, I thought.
I think it took a little more previous knowledge than most. If you're in the middle of one of these monologues and you say the wrong word, and that might be funny, where in a lighthearted play, if all the plays NRT did were movies, and they all had special features sections, this one would not have blooper reels.
Mm.
Because even though those things do happen, you don't really want to point them out too much.
We've had a couple lines.
We've had a few times.
Where we start bursting out laughing. Yeah. I think if you have to.
Yeah.
There are certain breaking points, but like, yeah.
There's been less chance to do improv in that way.
Well, they do.
I'm almost scared to do improv.
Yeah.
Because with Ralph, it's like the obvious thing, improv is like talking about disgusting things.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, it's been fun. It's been light. We've been trying to keep it light, and
I don't know if Sarah can improvise a neurological.
Yeah,
hers is very. She has a scientific monologue.
Yeah, that's been probably one of the tougher things. Is the factualness of a lot of my lines.
Out what those words mean.
Yeah, what I'm even talking about is a challenge. What's the cortex, huh?
Sarah probably has. There isn't much coffee show. There's a couple lines. You might chuckle a couple times, but it's like Sarah has most of those moments, the lighter moments.
And just out of, I feel like my character can be so pathetic that it's kind of funny. It's not
She's a real dork too.
Yeah.
She makes all these lame jokes sometimes. It's very funny.
Yeah.
But my favorite of hers is, "Let me see me earn my buck."
Earn my buck.
Okay.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room for improv. Sure.
Well, when you just gave that further detail into your character, are these three misfits in their own way?
I mean,
or are they two normal people and one really disturbed person?
I don't think that you could categorize them that way.
Okay.
I think in each of their own ways, yes, they are kind of on the outside.
They're three very different minds.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't think that just because Agatha is the psychologist and she is the one on the outside of these two. If you were to talk about the plot of the play, it's Ralph murders this little girl and the mother has to deal with it, and then, you know, Ralph has to deal with it, and then Agatha kind of just comes in and does a paper on it. You see so much of Agnes's personal life that it becomes actually one of the major themes of the show. So it's like, you don't think that you're just going to see Sarah Amy standing up on stage and doing these long-winded, like, well, this is the cortex, and this is where, like, pointing to a screen, and then she has moments where the science comes out, but it's always related to the social, the dynamic of the whole play. And honestly, some of my favorite monologues in the show are when she goes on about science of it, and it becomes very interesting. One of my favorite monologues is her closing scientific monologue. I think it's fascinating.
It transcends science.
It does. It becomes social.
It becomes, totally social.
There was because reading the script, there's some things that Agatha reveals about Ralph to the audience, like the Agatha's dialogue revealed about Ralph to me as an actor reading the script, this isn't giving away much, but she does a test where she, she says, if you approach someone and you, like, tap them on the nose, naturally they'll blink if they're not comfortable with the outside source, but people who have
Insufficiency of suppression.
Yeah.
I've learned that they phrase.
Like, will react differently, and she taps Ralph on the nose a couple times, and then he starts blinking uncontrollably. And,
so if you want to test to see if your friends are serial killers, did this test on a bunch of people when I first read the script, and like all my friends were normal, until I got to a good friend of ours named Ted Shiloh. I did a test on him, and he was just sort of swatting my hand and was like blinking right. I was like, you're a serial killer.
Yeah.
I mean, even Brad passed. Brad Einstein passed.
Are either of these two subscribers?
Hopefully.
Okay. I will send them a link.
I don't really think I answered Sarah's question. I think it's the key to to approaching Ralph not just as an actor but as an audience member is eventually grasping a hold of the fact that he's insane. And Jesse pointed out once at rehearsal that the definition of insane is
the inability to relate to other people.
Yeah. So like
that's
the definition of insane is when you can't relate to other people.
Shades
of gray, all over.
I wanted to mention that definition. I thought that was like interesting.
Yeah.
Because, the whole idea of understanding the show is understanding where all three of these people are coming from. And I guess Ralph is the hardest to understand where he's coming from until you lock onto that one thing. He has an inability to relate to other people.
Okay.
Anything else you want to say to entreat people to come?
I'll do a little bit. It's
free.
Free. Don't be scared of like the disturbing moments like that with that. I would say I said in my original audition podcast that it makes Pillow Man kind of look like the moments in Pillow Man look like an Easter pageant, and there are moments where it's like
Pillow Man had jokes.
Pillow Man was a little Pillow Man was dark comedy, but this is. There are going to be moments of you're going to be uncomfortable at parts, and I think that's the point. It's going to force you to confront things. Like the play is saying, have sympathy for a serial killer. Think the grieving mother really isn't all that awesome. It's like they're telling you to like to look at these people and say and destroy these stereotypes.
We're not shoving it down your throat.
No. It's just what it is. It doesn't shove it down your throat at all.
Yeah.
Our connoisseurs will enjoy it,
Yeah, it's very different.
I like that.
Like, have it with a dark beer. It's a winter time play.
It's perfect for it being -4 degrees outside.
Like the movie theaters know the same. It's the same thing, when the weather's warm, you get the big spectacle events. When the winter's cold, when you get the stuff that you gotta think about.
Yeah, this is not the Philadelphia Story. It's very different. I guarantee you that you have not seen a show like this. Very few shows are just all monologue based, but just beyond that like structural element, it's just radically different.
If anyone out there were concerned about content, know that at first, when my mom found out I was playing this role, was not going to come. After I read the script, I didn't want her to come either. But after I read the script, I said, "This definitely will become like a."
Yeah.
It's not inappropriate.
No. And like Jesse said, I am very squeamish. I mean, I don't have a very strong stomach. And I was kind of, when I read the script, expecting to be, upset in that way. And I was really happily surprised that it's certainly not something that's going to,
It doesn't exploit your emotion.
No.
It's not daring you to, it's not like a Saw movie where it's like, if you don't throw, I'm daring you to throw up right now, basically. It's not violent. It's just it's very real. I think it really wants to make you look at these people and think differently about them, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't shove it down your throat. It's very subtle. The changes happen very subtly. You'll find yourself feeling different things and you won't know why.
And when can people feel these different things?
Well, Friday and Saturday, January 30th and 31st at 8 p.m. That's what I know right now in terms of shows. Keep checking, we have an event, we're going to have an event page, and we have a a website, which I'm sure there's a link to somewhere around where on your computer right now. But
there better be.
If yes, because we have not gotten our schedule yet for our tech week, so I don't know if we're going to have a Thursday night show. So don't show up on Thursday expecting a show, but we might have one.
Okay. Well, join our Facebook group. NRT fans, we don't want a refund. And you can check the event page then and get closer.
And when it gets closer, there'll be more information. So if you're if it's Wednesday and you want to check to see the Thursday night show, there might be, there might not be. So double check on the website for that.
Okay.
And the Facebook group.
And always free.
Always free.
Yay. See you then. Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thanks for listening in to NRT's podcast. Stop by next week for
Exit the King by Eugene Ionesco, directed by Ryan Bergman. This will run next weekend, February 5th through the 7th. So please join us next week when we speak to the director and cast of the show. And again, join us for Frozen this Friday and Saturday, January 30th and 31st at 8 p.m. in 111 Forum, with a special performance on Saturday, January 31st at 2 p.m. So again, three performances, one on Friday, January 30th at 8 p.m., and two on Saturday, January 31st at 2 p.m. and at 8 p.m. All performances in 111 Forum, and all, of course, are free. So hope to see you there, and take care.